The Mechanics is now sponsored by Audible.com. As part of this sponsorship, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a 30-day trial so you can check out the range of titles that they're offering. Currently, Audible has over 180,000 books to choose from for either your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. To help support this podcast, please go to www.audibletrial.com/mechanics. And now, on with our next episode.
Okay. Hello, everyone who's decided to join us live, or those of you who have decided to join us offline on the podcast. Thanks again for joining us. It's been 2 weeks since our last episode. I'm delighted today to have Professor Sabrina Maniscalco from the University of Turku in Finland, who is not only working on a lot of great stuff when it comes to theoretical sort of quantum technology and condensed matter systems, but is also deeply engaged when it comes to sort of quantum games and citizen science and all the kind of stuff that I'm trying to work on when it comes to mechanics. So Sabrina, thanks a lot for giving us an hour of your time.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. Hi, everyone.
So traditionally, I mean, you and I, we've had a bit of chats over email over the last couple of years, but we met finally in person a couple of weeks ago at this summit on artificial intelligence and citizen science that the Science at Home project organized in Denmark. And this, you know, especially with your work in this sort of citizen science stuff that's happening in Scandinavia, this has now turned into to something that you're deeply, deeply interested in. It's not just traditional physics, it's now gamification and this kind of outreach to the general public, especially when it comes to quantum computing, or quantum physics. So can you give us sort of a bit of a rundown of sort of how you got interested in this? Because you came from, correct me if I'm wrong, but you came from a traditional sort of theoretical physics condensed matter background, and now this is something that takes up a lot of your time and a lot of your interest.
Yes, exactly. So actually everything started, I think, in 2011. I had just moved to Edinburgh. I was in Turku before, but we organized international festival of physics. Because at the time, Turku, Finland, where I now work, was the European capital of culture. So we organized a number of public outreach events. I've always been very enthusiastic about public outreach and science and art collaborations and events. So, and in that period, we were showing some quantum circus. So we created a circus based on quantum physics. It was a 2 years long project. And I remember that during that, I think it was one of the dinners with some of the people who were interested in the quantum circus, someone started to ask me about Foldit, you know, this game, one of the first applications, you know, of on real scientific problems. And they asked me, do you think it would be possible to gamify research problems in quantum physics? So, and I remember this was really the first time I started to think or you know, have some ideas on whether or not would be, you know, possible, even possible to create video games that solve open questions or research problems in quantum physics. So this was back in 2011. And then at that time I worked in Edinburgh, and it just happened that there were some groups working on game studies and game development in the same university, Heriot-Watt University, where I was. And we started to create some small projects related to the to gamification. And one of my closest friends at the time in Edinburgh, we're still very good friends, is a science fiction writer, Hannu Rajaniemi, who also lived in Edinburgh. And he was of a very good center of excellence in Finland, in which they developed, they also did game gamification and game development and generally game studies. And he said, when you go back to Finland, or if you go back just for holidays, go and contact them. And this is what I did. So I visited, this was the Game Lab Tampere, in Tampere, the group of Franz Maurer. And I just went there and say, oh, you know, I would like to talk a little bit. So just started because I asked them, do you think it would be possible to do something like this? Or do you think it would be, you know, would you be interested? Would anyone here be interested in developing video games connected to quantum physics in some way? And well, what happened is that one of the people of Franz group, Anna Casa Cultima, was in the audience when I gave a talk related to gamification, and she happens to be the president of the Finnish Game Jam Association. Mm-hmm. This is where my collaboration with the Finnish Game Jam Association began, and we started to explore, you know, possibilities of developing games both for education in quantum physics and for research via game jams. So using as a starting brainstorming point, game jams.
So this is something certainly for people who've logged onto this podcast who are listening for quantum technology, this idea of what a game jam is. I mean, people sometimes hear of hackathons and people hear things like this, but this distinction between hackathons and game jams and this kind of community organizing around sort of basically coding in some context. I mean, can you give us a sort of an idea of what this is?
Yes, yes. So game jams are basically some gatherings of, in our case, quantum physicists, but normally there are no quantum physicists. So it's basically game developers, computer coders, graphic designers. And it is an event that generally lasts 1 week or 1 weekend, so a short period of time. Mm-hmm. And during this event, there are, through certain activities aimed at forming teams, people work together with the aim of developing video games or also board games, actually, games in general, based on certain themes. So generally, in the quantum game jams, we give three different themes, which are based on quantum physics. So it is basically an occasion for people to sort of brainstorm in a very free way together with, you know, other. There might be students, there might be professionals. I mean, it's quite varied, actually, the type of, you know, participating to the game jam. And what is very important is really to have this sort of time limit. So you really are giving yourself, and very often, you know, creativity is you know, stimulated by constraints like time limits or certain limits, things you can't do, you know, because you don't have resources. And this could be a way of stimulating creativity in different ways. And also game jams, it's one of the main ideas. And generally people, of course, there are some people who always, you know, who come more often to the game jams, but generally they are, you know, one works with people who have never met before. So it's also an opportunity for meeting people, both professionals and like people who have the really a passion for games. As I said, there are different types of people, in the sense that there could be computer coders, graphic designers, sound designers, storytellers. Basically, anyone who is interested in developing a certain expertise, you know, in games, is interested in developing games, can participate. And there's a short period of time in which people, you know, sort of have some sort of speed dating activity that teams can be formed through these speed dating activity. I would say that the very first activities, generally we do it on Friday evening because many people, you know, work, so we do it during the weekend. And the very first thing is just a short introduction. Everyone, but very super short, actually. It's really a way of, you know, just the name and what you are interested in. It could be just, I don't know, Sabrina, and I like doing games with dogs, for example. Anything, but super short. And then after the themes are launched, people start having maybe in 2 or 3 minutes, developing some idea that then discuss in pairs through this speed rating. And then finally, there is pitching. So people are pitching their idea or their team or themselves, because they can also pitch. I'm a graphic designer. Anyone wants to work with a graphic designer. Eventually, teams are formed, and you have generally 48 hours to work in order to create a game on one of the proposed themes that are, in our case, related to quantum mechanics. It is different from a hackathon, because generally, well, in several senses, generally hackathons are much more competitive. Very often there are prizes, while this atmosphere here is definitely not competitive. People also help each other through different teams. There are people who are actually joining different teams. Sometimes a computer programmer disappears or leaves, and then you need another one. So it is a very, very friendly atmosphere. Also, well, hackathons are also generally could be, I mean, they hack existing games. So while in this case, so in the case of the game jam, there is no hacking.
I mean, they're developing it from scratch, aren't they? They take a theme and they have to build everything from the ground up.
Exactly. So it's completely developed. And then at the end of the game jam, they create some short videos presenting the game, and also the playable game, as well as the video, is uploaded on a website and it's also presented by the teams. Sometimes we present it it's open to the public, so we also have the final presentation moment, presentation of the games. Sometimes we also do it, inviting everyone who is interested. So as a public event, we have been doing it last year, for example, in Heureka, and it is the most important science museum in Finland. It's in Vanta.
I remember you saying at the conference we were at a couple of weeks ago that you actually got to use the planetarium as like your projection screen.
Yes, which would have been
absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and there were amazing games also developed for that. So basically, one of the challenges was to develop. So as I said, they were all related as a theme to quantum physics, but this so they could use the planetarium, and we were staying in the museum all the time. So also overnight, we were sitting there. Generally, people actually don't sleep a lot. They are you can have a few hours with a sleeping bag, in the museum we were, but generally people work all the time. So the idea was to develop video games that could be shown in the planetarium, so in the cupola of the planetarium, and played either, in one case there were players were using mobile phones, for example, interacting with the planetarium, or it could be through computers, or there were different solutions that they found, in some sense, exploit this possibility. And the planetarium was fantastic because...
But they were interacting on the dome with these games that were...
Yes, they were interacting the dome. Yeah. Exactly. The game was on the dome, and they were interacting with the dome, both either with mobile phones or just with computer inside. With the mobile phones, it was via the webcam, actually.
So, these game jams, I mean, I'll ask you to sort of give us a summary of these things, because they've certainly turned into big things, this idea of the global game jam and regional game jams and stuff like that. But in terms of this context, I mean, how is it usually organized? Because you must be one of the few, if not the only person, who organizes these game jams with a scientific sort of goal within...
quantum physics, yes. For scientific, I don't think so. I mean, I think that there are several game jams for other scientific topics, but we start initially in Finland and then globally, the global quantum game jam. So for quantum physics, we did... begin this tradition of the global quantum game jam. But game jams are relatively new. I think that the first global game jam was in 2009, while the first game jam was developed, I think it was in 2002, some indie developers started this tradition. And then it became global in 2009. And now the global game jam that I think will be in January 2017. It involves really a huge number, like I think 90 different countries and 30,000 or 35,000 players per time zone. So it's really a huge event.
And this is in January?
I think it's January 20, 21st and 22nd.
Are you doing another one? Because you just finished one, so I imagine you're probably not doing another one.
So what we are doing is the global quantum game jam. But there are very many game jams during the year. So this is the most famous global game jam. What we just did was the global quantum game jam that was in end of November this year. So and there were, so it is not as big as the global game jam because, well, this is something that we just started,
of course.
And also because physics is still quite, so we do have quantum physicists in the teams very often, so because we would like at the same time to develop either to develop games that are meant for education or to develop, so we have some educational themes and some research themes. Mm-hmm. So the people can divide, every team decides whether to choose an educational, the development of an educational game, sort of explaining the intuition behind the quantum physics or trying to teach something about entanglement or superposition and so on. Or otherwise, there is a possibility of developing also a game that solves a problem that is still open in quantum physics. So,
to give us a bit of a solid idea before we go into more of the gaming stuff, which is obviously pretty cool from my perspective, because of course this is not your day job. You are a traditional theoretical physicist with a theoretical physics group. And you said to me a couple of weeks ago that most of your students and most of the people, their day-to-day work is not focused on this gaming stuff. It's actually focused on sort of more traditional physics. So does this link in with your group or with your collaborations within Finland and more globally within the EU?
Yeah. So, yes. So my background is, as you say, theoretical physics, and in particular, I did my PhD more in quantum optics, so I come from quantum optics, and then developed towards more quantum technology-oriented topics, and in particular, my specialty is open quantum systems, so to be precise. So I work in open quantum systems and open quantum systems for quantum technologies. So I am here in Turku, I'm the chair of theoretical physics, and we have a center for quantum physics that involves four different groups. And my group is a Turku Quantum Technology group that is consists of about 20 people. We work on different aspects on quantum technologies. I have so my connection in particular with the last theme of the quantum game jam is via a European project that I coordinate within Horizon 2020. And this European project is quantum probes for complex systems. And in particular, one of the aspects of one of the research topics of QPROX, the acronym of the project, is indeed something that we are trying to solve or to explore using video games. So we are introducing in this European dimension also in our consortium, we're trying to introduce also gamification of research connected to optimal control of probing in particular.
Oh, so citizen science is now a part of your, you know, day-to-day research job as well. It's not just a hobby.
Yeah. It is really something that it's becoming more part of my day-to-day job, but I do not have, contrary to Science at Home, for example, we do not have a team of people working only on the citizen science. So basically, all of my PhD students are doing their, and postdocs are doing their research, in standard physics. But many of them are also very enthusiastic about citizen science. And so for example, at the Quantum Game Jam, we were eight. So eight of my people, participated to the November Global Quantum Game Jam, and they are just doing it because they think it's fun. Mm-hmm. Because I forced them. No.
It's a very interesting thing. Certainly this kind of citizen science, especially when it comes to quantum, really comes out of Scandinavia, and it's you and it's your group and it's Jakob and the guys in Denmark. Both of you seem to be the major players, certainly within Europe and Scandinavia, but even I would argue worldwide, especially when there's kind of stuff regarding to quantum, and you guys have been doing it for quite a while. You guys came into it, 4 or 5 years ago?
Yes. I think it's, in my case, what is crucial is really the connection. So two things. The first one is the fact that here in Finland, let's say there's a very good environment of small companies and professionals developing games. So games are big in Finland. It's a country which is with a lot of people involved in small companies and big companies, and a lot of professionals working in the game industry. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to immediately actually find a connection with the Game Jam Association that is obviously, knows all the contacts of people, interested in gaming. So in some sense, it would be not possible for me to work, let's say, in gamification of problems of quantum physics without the help and the connection with the Finnish Game Jam. I mean, they are really organizing. So the Quantum Game Jam is mostly organized by them. I mean, in collaboration, and we are contributing to this quantum. But we couldn't do it without them. They have the contacts and they know how to do it. They've been doing it since 2010, so it's 6 years. And they are also members of the Global Game Jam Association. So basically, I would say that there is in Scandinavia there is a very strong tradition both of game jams and of games and game studies. Research and so on. For example, there was recently the first professor on gamification was appointed in a consortium between Turku and Pori. So, I mean, there is a lot of activity and investment, even in the academic sense, in game studies. And therefore, I think that the environment is really the right one, and it helps really in
Well, I mean, in the game jams, so how many quantum game jams have you run? You've run two or three?
Three. The first one was not global, so it was only in Turku. We ran the first one in an astronomic observatory in Tuorla. Mm-hmm. And then the numbers are usually between 50 and 60 people, participating at the game jam, okay? Then the second one, locally in one place. Obviously, the second one was global, so of course there are many more participants. But the main organizers, we are the main organizers, and we have generally 50, 60 people in on site.
So you've got you've got these sort of 48-hour development cycles. You know, everyone's in the same room, they sleep, they work in teams, and build these sort of prototypes based around a central theme in quantum. Has anything sort of developed beyond that? Has some of these things gone on and either been developed sort of privately by some of these students or some of these participants, or, sort of pawned off onto other places to sort of maybe grow into something big?
Yeah. Well, I think that this is the first year where we are actually having two games that have connected to, solving open problems in quantum physics that have a very strong potential to be fully developed. So the reason is that this is also the first year in which we use a new approach for games So for gamification of problems, of open problems in quantum physics. So it's the first year in which we use, let's say, we called it a black box. So right. Basically, instead of, so we have been developing from physics point of view, some sort of black box that simulates some complicated dynamics. And then we just give the black box that is implemented in Unity. That is basically the game engine that most of the game developing people use. And so therefore they don't have to, because it's a very short amount of time, we don't have to, let's say, explain too much about the physics and about the physical problem, but they do have already sort of a black box to use directly. And so this has made, you know, huge change in the way in which the games are developed. Yes.
And this is not an educational program. This is really sort of the citizen science side where you're trying to get game players to solve a problem.
Yes, exactly. This is this type of, yes. Of course, there are, there have been in the previous years also nice games for education, but none of them has been then, and some of them playable and actually quite mm-hmm. nice, but none of them then has been commercialized. Right. It's also, you know, all the games developed are all like Creative Commons license, so they cannot be directly used, you know, sold, so to say. But some of them are playable and nice. None of them has been eventually, you know, commercialized. Also because of the way in which the game jam works. But these two. This is the first year in which we also have not only games for education but game for research. This is the difference, I think.
So given the strength of sort of, as you said, the gaming industry in Finland and the gaming industry in Scandinavia. And also the strength that you sort of see within the public image of quantum. I mean, are some of these major players within the gaming industry, are they sort of trying to get into this? I mean, I don't know if you saw in the last couple of days, the guys at Caltech just released another short movie. So I don't know if you saw this one for Quantum Chess about a year ago.
I saw the tweet, but I didn't see that movie. I mean, I saw the on Twitter, but I didn't see the movie, no.
Yeah, they've done a follow-up with basically, you know, the three cast members from the Star Trek movies, and Stephen Hawking was in it again. And I mean, again, it's really coming into the public interest. I mean, quantum's always there in the public interest, whether it's quantum computing, quantum communications, or any of this kind of stuff. How does the gaming industry sort of interact with you, given that you're one of the few people that work on this? Do they sort of come to you and say, well, you know, can you work as a consultant? Can you help us develop ideas that could generate, you know, whether it's a citizen science stuff or just, you know, something that's based on quantum and, you know, looks cool?
That would be very interesting. We did have companies sponsoring the Quantum Game Jam. Last year, Remedy, for example, sponsored our Quantum Game Jam. And this year, we had contacts with King, one of the Default is this game engine that King is using. I think it's for mobile phones, but I don't know exactly. One of these default evangelists wanted to participate to the Quantum Game Jam. Mm-hmm. Eventually, it didn't happen because we didn't have time to arrange it in time. I must say, the development of the black box really happened at the very last moment because it takes time for us also to develop it. And because, sure. as I said, we don't have, let's say, a dedicated team for citizen science. So we do it more as a hobby at the mm-hmm. moment. So in some sense it didn't happen for practical reasons, but yes, King and was interested in a longer term collaboration. I have to say that I do not know, so the idea of the consultant is interesting as you were presenting it. Probably I wouldn't have time for that. Okay, I don't know what to do first.
But you are a department chair, so you know you're probably busy with other stuff.
I'm very busy. But what we would like to do is to have, and what we are, you know, the direction we are taking is to really start a small group with personnel dedicated to some citizen science and quantum quantum gamification related topics, but at the moment it's more like at the stage of planning rather than having. At the same time, we are having, in January, we already have meetings with the two teams that have developed in the Game Jam the most promising gamification of open science games. And this will happen in January. And we are also having another meeting with a number of, not only the members of these two teams, but also some other people. For them, what we think is one of the crucial ingredients in this black box type of gamification is an interface between different language, like Fortran in our case, because our computer codes are in Fortran, the physicist, and Unity. So we are developing now, we are in the process of developing this interface in a more and more efficient way. So this is crucial because you need to be very, very fast for gaming, to work in time-dependent problems as those that we want to tackle in this case. So we have these three work groups that have started already to discuss ideas and will meet in person in January. And at the same time, already some of my students and some of the game jammer have basically finished implementing in Unity all quantum gates and quantum registries. And this will be like available for everyone who wants to use them. So it's a shared, sort of an open resource. If anyone wants to build games using quantum gates and registers, one can just directly use them program them from Unity.
Do you see this sort of coming into and becoming a more core component of this research? I mean, you've got the guys at Aarhus University in Denmark. We've got you guys in Finland. You've got James Wooten at Basel doing Kodoku, and obviously we're looking at Mechonics here that the Danes are now going to help us out with. There seems to be a lot within, especially quantum computing and quantum technology, that opens itself up for sort of puzzle problems and gamification. Now, as you've said, your stuff is a much more sort of fundamental physics stuff. It's not so much on the, application level or the programming level. But as you said, the black box stuff you did with the last Quantum Game Jam, you didn't mention it in this podcast, but I remember your talk from a couple of weeks ago was related to Bose-Einstein condensates. Do you see that? I mean, one of the big problems we always talk about is how easy it is to gamify a problem. Do you think that within physics and within quantum physics, whether it's quantum technology or just basic quantum mechanics, that this is something that is doable without, having people to have to read, pages and pages of documents as to what the quantum mechanics actually means?
I think it is doable. As I said, that's why we developed this black box idea, because we do not necessarily want to explain. So our idea is that if the players are interested in learning something, definitely they will have some explanations related to what is actually happening inside the black box. However, if they don't want to, they just have inputs and figures of merit. So they do not, they can create any game which has three time-dependent input parameters and one or two figures of merit at the outcome. And I mean, indeed, at the Game Jam, the type of games they've created are completely, I would have never imagined, that they would come out with these ideas. It's a very general setting, and it may not have anything to do really with the original problem. In our case, it doesn't have actually anything to do with the original BEC problem. In this case, you do not need to explain anything to the gamers about what's going on, but you can if you want. So obviously, you can then have different layers somehow in the game development. For us, what is important is that we really want the games to be developed by game developers, so by professionals. Because it's already difficult. I mean, it's a difficult, industry. I mean, majority of the games developed do not succeed, are not really fun, are not playable. They live a short time. Obviously, you need to have the game played in a longer you know, by many people to have enough statistics to analyze then the, you know, if actually the players are outperforming computers, or in any case are solving the original problem.
Yeah.
But you need to analyze statistics, so the game has to be playable, enjoyable, and it has to, you know, from my perspective, is useful if it is done by professionals and not by by us. But there is another point which is important. It is the fact that very often, in some sense, I don't know how to say it, but the dialogue itself from between the physicists and the game developers, graphic artists, and so on, okay, this process of finding some sort of common language, it is very useful also to sort of have different perspectives for the physicists themselves on their problem. So it's like, as you try to discuss, you know, and explain in some sense some of the key aspects, you know, with the game developers or you know, whoever, the type of question they ask, it is also, it makes you sort of looking at the original problem from a different angle somehow. So also the process of gamification, of translation somehow of the original idea into the game could turn out to be, you know, give some intuition on possible solutions of the original game itself.
Do you feel that being quantum related, that you get more interest?
Well, I mean, in some sense, yes, because the community of the game jammers is always looking for sort of some novel, cool ideas.
Yeah.
Somehow. That quantum is exciting for them. So there is definitely an interest because it is connected to this, you know, people read nowadays in popular science magazines about quantum computers, quantum technology. So of course, there is clearly an interest just because, you know, for a lot of these people, the idea of having quantum technologies is interesting and cool. So they are nerds, most of, you know, the game jammers.
Well,
so
of course. We're all nerds.
Yeah, exactly. We feel at home.
Yeah, you're a professor of theoretical physics. You're a nerd by definition.
Yeah, by definition, indeed. Yes.
Yeah. So where are you hoping you're going to take this? I mean, you've done three already, one local and two global. This is obviously something you're going to continue to do, whether you feel...
We plan to continue annually the global quantum game jams, and we hope to have more and more countries and more people participating. We are also learning every year. We are also learning from you know, previous things that didn't go as well as we thought. I mean, we have been, for example, now we prepared much more in advance. We physicists, we realized that we need to, you know, prepare the themes in advance and think a lot about the problems we give. Let's say initially it was like much more of an improvised thing, but now it is from the physics point of view, from the physicist point of view, we need to invest more time thinking about the themes we launch. And then also, one of the main things is that you really have to inspire them. So when we launch the themes, this happened at the beginning of the game jam, this is done using via three videos. And this is a crucial moment because in some sense they have to be inspired, okay? They have to, the people, the jammers have to feel, oh, that's so cool, I wanna work on this. So it's something that really sort of, I don't know, doesn't say much about the physics problem, but still is connected to the physics problem, and at the same time makes them, you know, desire like to be part of this family of gamification, you know, to contribute to science. So it isn't that easy, and it's something that we have been learning, of course, with time, little by little. But we are still at the level in which we are all volunteering somehow. It's like hobby.
So I suppose this is, you know, I always ask people towards the end of the podcast if they want to plug anything, but I thought I'd bring it up now. People obviously think about gamification and maybe there's some grad student or some postdoc throughout the world who's thinking that, you know, I've got a problem that I think can be gamifiable. If they sort of contacted you guys and said, well, you know, maybe I have a theme to work with the next game jam that's related to quantum commuting or quantum physics or condensed matter physics. These are the kind of things that you're trying to, at least from the physics community, you're trying to outreach for and find something cool and something engaging and obviously physicists to help you.
Yeah, if there are some ideas of problems that could be, you know, gamified, we could consider them for the next game jam as one of the themes of the next game jams. Definitely, you know, so we are very interested in having, you know, suggestions of possible topics. Of course, another thing is that what we try to do is we also try to have some sort of to open up to also to countries where there are, you know, to groups where there are no physicists present, okay? So sometimes, this has happened already before in the previous global quantum game jams. Mm-hmm. So sometimes there are no physicists joining the game jam, and so we provide some 24-hour help desk via Skype, for example, or Slack of physicists. So if there are physicists who are interested or would like to help with the game jam, they can also help joining the this sort of online help desk for the game jam. People need to be present, you know, or be part of a game jam, you know, to be a helper, because you know the teams can just contact you, you know, online. And so there are different ways of helping and contributing, but this is one of the both.
This is so the gamers can get the physics right if they want to embed the physics into this.
Yes. Very often the teams ask us for, you know, they try to not to be too misleading in some sense, because obviously you need to simplify in the educational games, of course. In the research games is a different thing, but in educational games you need to, you know, sort of explain certain concepts by analogies or simplifying. And sometimes, you know, it's very hard to say, you know, where is the border between something that is just, you know, a wrong interpretation and something that is you know, an analogy that could be helpful to gain into of a quantum phenomenon. So that's why the physicists are there, to be like consultant in the game jam.
Yeah. So, I mean, we were at this conference a couple of weeks ago, and certainly, even though I've sort of, you know, put my toes in the water when it comes to this citizen science stuff, I had no idea how big this had gotten. I had no idea how many people were involved in how many different fields of science were getting involved in this. So, as somebody who's been involved in this much longer than I have, where do you hope this is going? I mean, where do you hope that this is going, not only for science in general, but also specifically for quantum and physics, rather than, you know, biology or medicine or health science or some of the other things that we saw at this conference in Denmark a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah. I think that there might be several interesting and useful sort of directions. One of them is definitely simply related to the fact of informing. So it's sort of a public outreach activity. So reaching a wider and wider public and sort of letting them know what is the current research in quantum technologies. This is something that is, I think, more and more you know, requested also from our funding agencies, both national level. It's a way of really informing also the community, you know, taxpayers, because in the end, the research we do in the university is mostly financed via taxpayers' money. Yep. So this is one of the possible outcomes. And there is another outcome or another direction that is related to really inspire young people, you know, towards or somehow interest them, stimulate their interest towards the science and the quantum physics in particular. And this using games is really the language they speak, really. And then there is, at the same time, there is perhaps the possibility of sort of, in some sense, teaching, or I would I hesitate to say teaching intuition about quantum physics, because we do know it's definitely a very counterintuitive, physical science or sub-branch of physics. But in some sense, perhaps gaining familiarity with this quantum, with certain weird quantum mechanics concepts, it might be something that may be useful, especially in a society that hopefully in the future will be using a lot of quantum technology. So will be heavily based, as we hope, on a number of new and new quantum technologies potentially can change society in many ways. So in some sense, it's I see it as one of the possible directions as well. So really education of young and also old.
Do you think it could augment sort of these training programs? I mean, obviously, if quantum technology is going to be a thing in the next 50 or 100 years, we're going to need people who are trained in quantum technology who are not necessarily quantum mechanics. You know, the need to know how to build and how to maintain this technology without having to spend 5 years understanding every aspect of quantum theory.
That's definitely also one of the more educational related directions that I think would be, I mean, we know that nowadays serious games are used really as a training tool for many, for many jobs and in many aspects. So this would be some sort of perhaps educational serious training, serious game sort of. But then there would be also the aspect of, in some sense, outsourcing research in quantum technologies, because really there might be, in these game box scenarios, there might be a number of research problems that could be solved via video games. This is one of the assumptions. No, actually, it's completely, I mean, we do have already some results that certain classes of problems could be, in some sense, there is evidence that players could be useful for certain classes of problems already in quantum physics, but we do not know, it's just the beginning, of course. So we do not know how far we can push it and how it can be further developed. Of course, there is an aspect related to, in some sense, solving problems, solving research problems through video games. But then there is also an aspect that is, I think, very interesting. We were thinking when we implemented the gates, and definitely you know very well this aspect, yourself, given your quantum computer game, let's say, and project. I mean, there is this interesting aspect, I think, that is, if you have certain, so we do know that, you can combine quantum gates in certain ways. And perhaps, I mean, if you give it as a building block tool within, a game that is aimed at, for example, exploring differences between classical and quantum gates, there might be some sort of new sort of understanding of what this basic quantum gates could be useful for in terms of algorithms, in terms of phenomena, because we this is not something that we play with very much, combining different gates in order to, or different quantum gates and comparing them with the classical ones.
Do you know this game that unfortunately is, the name is ironically similar. It's a game called Mechanic, which is sort of like Mechonics, but drop the U from Charlie Tahan in the US, that's very similar to this. I mean, it's got a quantum circuit and it's sort of like matching up density matrices. Sort of similar to what you want, not so much educational about how to design quantum algorithms, but certainly that kind of interface.
Yeah. I mean, let's say something similar at the quantum level would be, I think, potentially might be very interesting also, in terms of new generation of new ideas, understanding of new possible uses of quantum devices. Yes.
Yeah, well, quantum algorithm development is very hard. And if you can gamify that would be fantastic.
Of course, it may also be that eventually it will evolve towards a combination of, you know, artificial intelligence playing games and gamer. I mean, there might be, you know, the human aspect could be sort of part of an hybrid strategy. I don't know how to pronounce it. Hybrid, yes. but well, could be, yeah.
No, I mean, that sounds fantastic. I suppose we're getting up now to sort of our 50 minutes that I run these podcasts at. So we sort of talked about this a little bit before, but certainly at the end of every podcast, I like to give everyone the opportunity to advertise or plug anything that's happening, or if they want me to link to anything, or just mention what's happening, especially in Scandinavia and in Finland when it comes to both quantum computing, quantum technology, and gamification.
Yes. What do I have to say?
whatever you'd like to promote.
Oh, to promote, yeah, okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay, what we are doing in the both quantum technologies and citizen science here in Turku is, and in particular in the Turku Center for Quantum Physics and in the Turku Quantum Technology Group, that can be easily, so the majority of our activities can be found in our websites. Mm-hmm. I would say that from Finnish perspective, there is a very, very strong rising attention to the quantum technology field and to the collaboration, not only within Scandinavia, but at European level and worldwide as well. But with the incoming flagship, of course, there's a lot of activity of preparation, you know, of the new collaborations for the, but maybe not everyone knows, for the quantum technology flagship, which is one of the initiatives of the European Commission that will start in 2018. It's one of the main focus of where the Commission has recognized the importance in investing heavily in science. So it's the third flagship. The graphene in the human brain. So there is, and within this very exciting atmosphere, what we all you know feel is that there should be an important role of citizen science for the research, both in the flagship and at national level, both for research and for education. So what we are trying to do here. And, you know, because you're involved in this Quantum Alliance as well, that we are setting up now with everyone.
Yes.
Everyone is interested in citizen science and quantum technologies. So there is, let's say, an attempt of somehow really starting to promote more and more the use of citizen science for quantum technologies. And I would say, for the reasons that I already mentioned before, we feel that this would be important at different levels. So this is where we are, and we hope to, you know, to attract even more groups who are interested in these perspectives somehow.
Well, certainly. I mean, as I usually do every time we do this, I put links both to Sabrina's group website and to the Quantum Game Jam into the descriptions of this video and to all the podcasts. And I certainly encourage everyone to check it out. They've also got social media accounts that I'll link to. And obviously, if you've got any good ideas, if you feel you can participate, if you feel you can contribute, I would certainly encourage to get in contact with Sabrina and anyone else within the Scandinavian region. They're definitely leading the charge when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Okay.
So, yeah, at this stage, I suppose we're coming up against an hour. I don't tend to go a bit longer than that since this is a quantum technology podcast. If we can hold somebody's attention for 45 or 50 minutes, I think we're doing a pretty good job. But definitely thank you again for Sabrina for sitting down and giving me your hour of a time and talking about everything wonderful that's happening in Scandinavia and in Finland.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to chat.
Wonderful. So yeah, obviously this is a live cast on YouTube. Hopefully I will upload the podcast episodes on iTunes and SoundCloud within the next hour or so. Again, please look at our social media accounts, Facebook and Twitter. in order to see when this stuff gets uploaded and also to check in for our next guest. We're negotiating with a few people to come on the podcast. As soon as these dates and times are confirmed, I will obviously do the normal advertisement and log in and of course download, subscribe and share this far and wide. People seem to be reacting to this very nicely, and we're getting a nice cross-section of guests from the quantum community at this point. So thanks again for listening, and Sabrina, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.